Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Imagine that you or your wife, sister, or daughter are pregnant. They are excited to become a mom, but then something goes wrong. There's bleeding, and it won't stop. You go to the hospital emergency room, but the doctors can't do anything or won't do anything about it because she is not at risk of immediate death. They tell you you have to wait until the condition worsens. Well, the pain becomes unbearable, but still, you have to wait. Maybe they send you to a different hospital in a different county because the doctors and the hospital administration, they are afraid of what the state of Texas can do to them if Attorney General Ken Paxton says that abortion was not medically necessary. This is not some far-flung dystopian fiction. This happens all the time in Texas. We do have an exception in the law for abortion when the life and the health of the mother is at risk. But because of the politics of abortion, that exception is all but useless to most people. And to top it off, there's a lot of confusion in Texas when it comes to abortion. Joining us to tell us more, we're joined by Lara Marinar. She is the co-founder and executive director of Sueños Sin Fronteras de Texas, Dreams Without Borders of Texas. It's a grassroots collective that focuses on the intersections of immigrant justice and reproductive health and justice in South Texas. Lara Marinar, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
This confusion that, say, 8 in 10 women of reproductive age in Texas, they're unclear what the limits of abortion are, what exceptions that are available. Why do we have such a lack of understanding when it comes to something that is so critically important to the health and well-being of these individuals who are impacted by it?
Thanks for that question. And that's a great question. I believe, like, you know, in the context of the work that Sueños Sin Fronteras does, you know, what we see is that there is a widespread, widespread lack of information, of accurate evidence-based information. And, you know, honestly, I believe that is intentional. That misinformation exists, and like the lack of adequate information exists because the state of Texas doesn't want people to have this knowledge, this life-saving knowledge. And we believe that knowledge is power. And, you know, and that's really what it comes down to is that, you know, we, as a community, you know, we see this happening. We see this uncertainty and this confusion and these questions and this fear, you know, very prominent in our communities. And we know that there is a critical need for adequate information and accessible education and resources, because knowledge is power. But, you know, a lot of the information isn't in Spanish. I mean, speaking on the in the context of our work, you know, a lot of the information that we see isn't in Spanish. It's not well known to low-income communities, especially. And so people are kept in the dark and they're isolated about the realities of these cruel restrictions in our state.
Our phone number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can send us an email to thesource@tpr.org. Text us at that call at number 833-877-8255. Particularly if you have a question or an observation about what is the abortion law in Texas, what restrictions are there, what is the exception, because it's amazing that something so important that we just can't get straight answers, and we can't even really get straight answers from the state of Texas. When asked about this, the Texas Medical Board has come up with they're trying to put together a rule to clarify this. And right now, there is an opportunity for the public to provide input on this rule and try to get it clarified. So they're receiving public comment until June 1st regarding this new rule on medical emergencies in the context of exceptions to the abortion ban. And so the public really needs to express themselves on this. What can you tell us?
Yes. It is essential for people to know, the implications of this law and, what is at stake. And, really what is at stake is our lives. It's a life or death situation. And, we know the importance of having accurate and quality data and information, especially when it comes to the number of maternal deaths in Texas. This data is essential for informing and shaping public health policy for Texans. It's essential for community organizations to access funding to continue directly supporting people that are disproportionately affected by these cruel restrictions. Education, like I said, education and knowledge is power. And, it's pretty scary to know, I think to that the recent Houston Chronicle article that came out that the Texas Maternal Death Task Force can't review abortion numbers. And so knowing that unsafe abortion cases will not be reviewed by this task force is an injustice to Texans everywhere. Having access to this knowledge is a matter of life and death. It's basically saying that it's okay for these women, for these pregnant people who are seeking abortion care and who might experience complications or experience miscarriages where they need to access life-saving abortion care. It's basically saying that it's okay for them to fall through the cracks and that they don't count. And that is not okay. That's not how, that as Texans, we shouldn't stand for that.
If listeners want to go online to provide a comment on this rule that's being considered by the Texas Medical Board about exceptions to the abortion ban for saving the life of the mother during a medical emergency, you can go to the website progresstexas.org. They do have a portal there, a link where people can put in their comments to the Texas Medical Board trying to get clarification about what is a medical emergency and how can we save more lives in Texas and clear up this confusion. I mean, that at the very least is something that we need to be doing. So we're going to talk more about that on the other side of this break. And our phone line is open, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Do you feel like you have a really good understanding of the abortion law in Texas and the exceptions? Well, then you are the exception, but give us a call, 833-877-8255. We'll be right back.
Support for TPR comes from La Fonda on Main, honoring the authentic cuisine of interior Mexico since 1932. Open for lunch, brunch, and dinner. More information at lafondaonmain.com.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies, having a conversation with Lara Molinar, the co-founder and co-executive director of Sueños Sin Fronteras de Texas, Dreams Without Borders of Texas, a grassroots collective that focuses on the intersections of immigrant justice and reproductive health and justice in South Texas. So, Lara, I saw in a news story that you were quoted in, a couple of years old, but it said that you were quoted as saying that you were reluctant to tell people how to obtain a legal abortion in Texas because you were afraid of being sued. Is that still the case?
Yes. So actually, you know, it it is still the case because Sueños Sin Fronteras, me specifically, was included in the in a lawsuit that was filed by Jonathan Mitchell against the city of San Antonio and other reproductive justice organizations in San Antonio that helped advocate for the Reproductive Justice Fund that was recently passed in the city budget. And so although we are not specifically being sued, we were issued a motion of discovery and basically, you know, them requesting access to our documents, our, you know, our sensitive client information and, you know, information about every case that we've supported with. And so, you know, when that interview happened, you know, we were very much expecting that this was going to be the case, because although we have, you know, said that, you know, not going to lie, it has been very terrifying to think about the implications of that. But I just want to be clear that, you know, Sueños Sin Fronteras has always been committed to supporting immigrant people with any pathway that they choose, whether that's to keep their pregnancy or to terminate their pregnancy. And so, you know, we have been operating from that framework. And, you know, unfortunately, this baseless lawsuit has kind of thrown a wrench in things. But, you know, we are you know, still operating.
But it's tough when you feel like someone could come after you for a lawsuit at any given time for just informing people of what their rights are. That can be terrifying. Let's go to a caller. We do have Deborah on the phones. And Deborah, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I was just wondering if you have been doing any type of research in regards to the factor, what I have heard, that there are fewer and fewer doctors becoming OBs, obstetricians, and they're saying it's a direct effect of the ban on abortions, and that a lot of young doctors trying to start their practices are afraid of lawsuits, and because of the ambiguity in the law. And I was just wondering if any research has been done to see if this is actually true.
All right, Deborah, thank you for the call. I do know that doctors are having a hard time being trained in Texas, that they cannot be trained to perform some of the medically necessary abortion procedures. And also, they are moving to states where there is abortion freedom, like New Mexico, where they can perform the services that they are required to do so without fear of being sued, of being jailed, losing their medical license. But Lotta, if you want to answer Deborah's question.
Sure, that's a great question. I don't know specifically, you know, the data around that question, but I can speak on, you know, some of the things that we're seeing firsthand in the community. And, you know, it is very difficult to connect with OBGYNs who are willing to offer their support and guidance, because a lot of practitioners are terrified of the implications of these restrictions. And, you know, it's really devastating because, you know, I think everybody's livelihood is threatened, you know, and most importantly, the livelihoods of the communities that we're working alongside, but also, you know, the folks, the practitioners, the health practitioners that, you know, took an oath to, you know, to serve their patients in the best way. And, you know, just to know that they that it's deterring, very brilliant and compassionate people from becoming practitioners.
Right, and it's also having an impact on just the general health care of women. If you can't find yourself a doctor who is adequately trained to treat you and protect you, that impacts health all over. Let's go to another caller. We have Bonnie on the phones, and Bonnie, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to bring up that given our high maternal mortality rate in Texas, which is ridiculous, the first term abortion is safer for the mother than giving birth in Texas. And no one seems to want to bring that up or address it. Thank you.
Right. And one thing we should always try to fight for is that we should make childbearing, the birth process, as healthy as possible. And we are failing that in the state of Texas. But I want to bring up something else, that Texas recently, in the last year, without any notification, decided that they were no longer going to turn over the maternal mortality information to the nation, to outside the state of Texas. So they're making it more dangerous for the entire country because they don't want to share that information any longer. But Lotta, you mentioned this earlier about how now the state of Texas is refusing to turn over the data about women who die because of a lack of a medically necessary abortion to the Maternal Mortality Task Force. Can you tell us more?
Sure. So, what I know is that the State of Texas Committee, the Texas Maternal Mortality and Morbidity Review Committee, which serves under the Texas Department of State Health Services, recently reread their original legislative responsibilities and realized that they have not been allowed to review deaths involving abortions. And so, what that means is that earlier legislative reports, which, there was a recent one that came out that I believe like 63 pregnancy-related deaths in Texas in 2019 might have been undercounted. And it means that unsafe abortions, which are definitely expected to rise under these strict abortion restrictions, will not be reviewed by committee members. And that is just extremely alarming.
So in this study, looking at confusion, lack of knowledge from women who of reproductive age in the state of Texas, we see that a third of the respondents of the poll incorrectly believed that victims of rape and incest can legally access an abortion in the state of Texas. A third, basically, if you extrapolate from that, third of the women in the state of Texas think that they can get, there's an exception for rape and incest, and there is not in the state of Texas. So it seemed like that should be something that everyone should know, Laura.
Yes, absolutely. And especially because the information about these restrictions is already so limited and also like ambiguous. It's extremely important for people to know the specifics of this law and to now know just like how inhumane and cruel this is for Texans everywhere. And it is really, in real time, it is costing people their lives.
Well, when you think about it, though, no wonder there is so much confusion about this because the information stream is corrupted all the time. It's hard to get good information about anything these days, especially if people are getting their news on TikTok or whatever, and not from a trusted news source. It's going to be, just anybody getting up there saying anything. But, we don't have reliable sex education in the state of Texas, and people who can provide good information are afraid that they could be targeted with harassment or even a lawsuit. So it does seem like we're in an atmosphere that seems to foster misinformation about this critical information, Laura.
Right, absolutely. And I do want to also point out that even before the Supreme Court decision, the Dobbs decision overturning Roe versus Wade and you know, leading to that pathway of Texas implementing, you know, the most restrictive abortion law in the country, you know, undocumented families, specifically undocumented women and families, have been impacted by existing gaps in public benefit programs like Medicaid, the Texas Healthy Women's Program they're ineligible for. And so this creates insurmountable barriers and not just accessing abortion care, but like essential pregnancy and postpartum care. And, you know, what's really devastating about this is that with the lack of information and without access to evidence-based care, a lot of community members are, you know, they often turn to crisis pregnancy centers because, you know, they kind of, you know, the crisis pregnancy centers, they offer pregnancy tests and counseling and sonograms. But, you know, these centers are known to coerce pregnant people into keeping their pregnancies. They're often not run by, you know, physicians or any kind of medically licensed practitioner.
Well, they're run by the pro-life organizations.
Right. Yes, that's correct.
And then they'll try to delay a person who is early in a pregnancy, delay them from making a decision so that, you know, the further along a person gets, the harder it is for them to deal with this.
Right.
And so there's a deliberate strategy, and then and they get funding from the state of Texas.
Yes. Yes, they get a large amount of funding from the state of Texas. And actually, money has been diverted from essential state programs like TANF, and have been reallocated to fund crisis pregnancy centers by the millions. And so, you know, it really gives them the resources. The crisis pregnancy center have the resources and the tools to, you know, implement
right.
these predatory practices.
Let me ask you before I run out of time with you. So you're working with the city of San Antonio on this reproductive justice fund, and there's a lot of things that people want to do with that money. Do you think it can be used to clear up some of the confusion, at least locally, about what the law is?
Absolutely, certainly. So, you know, a lot of community organizations on the ground right now are, you know, working with very limited capacity, but they are trying, you know, very hard to create, you know, community education that can be, you know, shared with other agencies and partners.
In English and in Spanish.
In English and in Spanish, yes, because that's extremely important. And also, you know, we have a large Afghan refugee population, too. So, you know, working with translators to, you know, get them translated into different languages that people can access. But, you know, a lot of these community organizations are very underfunded, you know, with limited staff capacity. I mean, I speak for our organization personally, but, you know, this funding from the Reproductive Justice Fund would help to create that education that is needed in our community.
All right. Well, I want to thank you, Laura Molinar, the co-founder and executive director of Sueños Sin Fronteras de Texas, Dreams Without Borders of Texas, telling us about the issues of confusion about, you know, what is the abortion law, what is the exception, and what is happening. And I know you are a nonpartisan organization, so there are certain things we couldn't talk about, especially about politics, but when we come back from the break, we're going to be able to swing a little harder on politics when we're joined to talk about, you know, what is happening in the state of Texas with abortion rights. And you can join us. Give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And Alan, if you'll hang on, we'll get you on the air as soon as possible. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us.
The EarthX 2024 Environmental and Sustainability Congress of Conferences is happening in Dallas, April 22nd through the 26th, bringing together all sides with one important mission: protect our planet. For info, earthx.org.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're continuing our discussion about the latest developments with abortion rights in Texas, the lack of abortion rights in Texas, how this impacts women and health care, what's being done about that, the confusion around that, and how people are saying we need to clarify what is actually the exception in the state of Texas. You can call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We're now joined by Andrea Grimes. She is a writer, activist who pens the newsletter Home with the Armadillo. She also on that website, on that news site, she posts a roundup of abortion news. Hard to believe it's only Tuesday. A lot of the latest developments and what's happening in Texas with abortion. Andrea, welcome to The Source.
Thanks so much for having me. Pleasure to be here.
I'm going to go straight to a caller because Alan's been hanging on, and let's get him on the air and deal with Alan. Alan, hey, thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Oh, yeah, sure. Thanks for taking my call. I just have a question of how does that the abortion ban affect women that want to get pregnant but then fear, you know, that if they have a miscarriage or some problem that they wouldn't be able to get proper care?
Alan, thank you for the call. And I also have to mention that there is a growing number of men who are afraid that they may get a partner pregnant and then have a troubled pregnancy. And so we have seen studies showing a increase of men getting vasectomies. Even these are young men who have never had a child getting vasectomies because they're afraid of what happens with the total abortion ban. But Andrea, can you talk to Alan's question?
Yeah, sure. So abortion bans are meant specifically to foment the kind of fear and uncertainty that we're seeing right now across Texas and across the United States. They are intended to make people feel obligated to carry pregnancies to term that they do not want to carry to term, and to feel scared of obtaining treatment for pregnancies that they may want, all in the service of implementing sort of this right-wing, hyper-right-wing political view that all abortion is homicide.
So, Andrea, you're not connected to any 501c3 nonprofits. You can be a little more off the hook when talking about how this impacts politically, with a partisan politics. What are you seeing in the state of Texas? Do you think in November, even though we're not going to be like Florida where abortion will be actually on the ballot, but do you think this is going to impact Texas politics?
I think it already is impacting Texas politics. The question of whether it will have a significant impact in November is, of course, open at this point. I think that there are significant numbers of voters who maybe were able to convince themselves that things would never become this bad, that there would always be carve-outs for exceptions, that the right kinds of abortions would always be available, right? And we're seeing now that no abortions are available, right? And that the state is inserting itself into decisions around pregnancy care that are wholly inappropriate, right? And I think that while that has always been the goal of abortion bans and of the anti-abortion lobby, we are seeing day after day more and more really horrifying cases of folks who are unable to access medical treatment that they absolutely have a right to access, and they're unable to do so. And it's very possible that come November, enough Texas women, enough Texas transgender folks, enough Texas men, enough Texas families may feel fed up enough to take a different stance in terms of voting than they have in the past. Whether it will be enough to swing anything significantly in a new direction, I'm not sure. It may take longer than that.
Let's go to another caller. We have Heidi on the phone. And Heidi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you. I'm an obstetrician in Texas, and I just wanted to speak to the fact about how difficult it is for the physicians to interpret the laws as they are. And something I heard on your station just earlier was that perhaps the physicians were interpreting it too tightly. And physicians have a lot at stake, their licenses, their ability to continue practicing. And of course they care about their patients. They want the best for them. But even before the total abortion ban, I would say most obstetricians had stopped performing any elective abortions unless they were associated with an abortion clinic, because the laws are very hard to navigate and they're changing all the time. So, you know, I just say hear you to the physicians for trying to do the best they can, and wondered if you had any comments on that.
All right. Well, thank you, Heidi. So before we had the overturning of Roe, we had SB 8 in Texas, which was essentially, you know, we got the abortion ban in Texas early. Physicians who are found to be violating the abortion ban in the state face up to 99 years in prison, fines of more than $100,000, and could lose their medical license. So, yeah, there is a lot on the line for them. So, Andrea Grimes, if you want to respond to Heidi.
Yeah, Heidi, thank you so much for bringing this up, and thank you for providing the care that you are able to provide. Abortion bans are about demonizing doctors and medical providers in a lot of ways. They're about drawing a wedge between patients and their providers. Oftentimes, I think anybody who's been pregnant or had any sort of repro issues, you know, we develop really special relationships with our OBs and our OB-GYNs. And those relationships are so important. It's so important to be able to be open and honest with our providers. And what abortion bans do is tamp down on the kinds of conversations that can happen between patients and providers. They really create an era of distrust between patients and providers, and put providers in a really untenable position, right? No doctor should have to be facing life in prison, loss of license, massive fines for providing standard care. And in many cases, abortion care is the standard of care, right? So it's a real shame that Texas doctors and doctors elsewhere have been put in this position wholly unnecessarily in the service of political gains.
The Associated Press recently reported that they did a study in Louisiana, which is, you know, next to Texas, very similar in cultural attitudes, that they found a stark increase in the number of C-sections in pregnancies because doctors and hospitals were afraid of complicated pregnancies. And so that's a negative outcome. But, you know, from people, women who are thinking, well, this doesn't really impact me, and then you have an unnecessary C-section, you have been impacted. Andrea?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the details that we're hearing about unnecessary C-sections and hysterotomies are just really horrifying. There are so many cases in which traditional abortion care, D&E type care, is the indicated standard of care for treating pregnancy complications, and especially life-threatening pregnancy complications. And the fact that providers are being precluded from providing that safe, effective care and feel forced into providing, I mean, what is major abdominal surgery. I mean, C-sections can have massive consequences in the long term for fertility. They carry risks of sepsis, all of the things that come with surgery, right? So the fact that doctors and hospitals are feeling pressured and bowing to pressure, really, right, to provide these sort of excessive forms of treatment when something much simpler, much easier, much safer is available, I think belies sort of underlying claims from the anti-abortion lobby about being, you know, quote, pro-life or caring about both the woman and her pregnancy, right? These laws put pregnant people in more danger than they would be if abortion were legal and available, and if hospitals and doctors felt like they could provide the correct accepted standard of care without falling afoul of the law.
Also, we've seen that 26,000 rape-related childbirths in Texas have occurred since the fall of Roe. And this is a report that's now 6 months old, so that number has only gone up since then. Because we don't have exceptions for rape and incest, we have forced birth by women to bear the child of their rapist.
Absolutely. And it's worth noting that rape and incest exceptions, even where they do exist, are very rarely implemented and used. They come with a lot of hurdles that can really compound the harm and trauma that has already been experienced by people who have been sexually assaulted and who may be pregnant as a result, right? They may come with requirements to report a rape or a sexual assault to police, which some folks may not be comfortable with, and a lot of times is not an effective way of addressing the issue in the first place. Right?
When you're dealing with trauma and other issues.
Precisely, right? So it sort of forces the pregnant person to relive this trauma, right? To recount it to yet more strangers, to file paperwork, right? All of these things that, you know, are truly unnecessary if we're talking about truly caring for people's mental, physical health and safety, right? The rape and incest exceptions are rarely used. They're ineffective almost all of the time. And I think it's really part of a smokescreen to make abortion bans seem less draconian than they are.
Right. So when we come back from this break, I want to talk to you more about some of the waffling and the backtracking that we're getting from some of our politicians, including Donald Trump, and whether or not that is to be believed. What does that look like? We're talking about life in Texas under end of Roe. You can give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. It's The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Abortion was again before the U.S. Supreme Court today as they talked about EMTALA, which is the emergency abortion availability for women in hospitals. And the federal government says if you're a hospital taking federal dollars, then you should be able to provide emergency life-saving abortion care. And again, what we've heard from the Supreme Court today, you wouldn't be surprised that it tends to be rather skeptical of providing this. We're talking with Andrew Grimes, a writer activist who pens the newsletter Home with the Armadillo. That she has a abortion news roundup on her site, which keeps you pretty much up to date on all of the ins and outs, what's happening with abortion law in Texas and across the country. Let's go to a caller. We have JD on the line, and JD, you're on the air.
Yes, how are you doing? Thank you for having me on. My thing is the hypocrisy of the Republican Party. They back up Ken Paxton, who is still awaiting trial, I believe, on a couple of issues, and Trump, who also is awaiting trial, and I think he's going through a trial right now. Of all the illegal things they've done, yet the Republican Party supports them.
All right, JD, I think Ken Paxton has reached a plea deal and no trial for him. And of course, Donald Trump is in a courtroom today in New York, and he has other trials happening up. So, Andrew, what are you seeing from Trump when it comes to his abortion doublespeak?
Well, we're seeing anything and everything from Trump on abortion. When he talks about abortion, really on anything, but abortion specifically lately, he is filling, I think, dead airtime trying to just make it to November. I think Trump will say anything he thinks anyone wants to hear on abortion. And, you know, we've heard him take a variety of stances. Years ago, he said that women who have abortions must be punished. And then a few weeks ago, he issued his bizarre video on his Truth Social media platform saying that abortion should be left up to the states. So, I don't think Trump has any true beliefs on abortion. I think Trump's belief about abortion is that Trump should be president and will say or do just about anything to get himself into the White House, at which point I think we can count on Trump to do the bidding of the anti-abortion lobbyists who are very open about having put him there.
So also this is happening in Arizona, other side of New Mexico. where they have put in place a law that was there before they were even a state. Now that has going to, it has not even in effect yet, but it could completely shut down abortion there. And we have Carrie Lake, who is running for governor, who was a senatorial candidate who lost that, and she's a conservative darling, and she's also been flip-flopping all over the place on this issue. So it's really hard for, as you can see, for these right-wingers to find the right way of talking about abortion that will appease the hard right Christian radicals that they have, and also not scare off the suburban moms that they need those votes. Is that right?
Well, you know, Carrie Lake is such an interesting example. She's gone back and forth four or five times since the 19th century abortion ban in Arizona was approved by the Supreme Court there. And I think there's a reason why Carrie Lake, Trump, these other Republican politicians have such trouble messaging on abortion is because they have caught the car, right? They can no longer campaign exclusively on overturning Roe. They've done that. And now that the horrifying consequences of abortion bans are coming to bear, they're really having trouble navigating the lived reality that people see on the ground. They're now unable to continue these sort of gaslight politics of telling voters that, you know, what you're seeing, what you're experiencing isn't true, will never come to pass, right? We know that people are being turned away from emergency rooms. We know that people are miscarrying in emergency room bathrooms. We know that people are miscarrying in their cars, waiting for care outside of hospitals, right? We know that folks are turning to safe self-managed abortion with medication, right? So it's just becoming harder and harder for Republicans to tell the electorate, don't believe your lying eyes. And I think the scramble on all of this is evidence of that. There are no you know, true beliefs underpinning any of these abortion bans other than the desire for social control and, you know, enforcing government control of folks' bodies. And now that people really know what that looks like, they're too scared to say it.
So the consequences, if Arizona does adopt this total abortion ban, and right now it looks like that is going to be happening, how does that impact Texas? Well, if people from Arizona then go to, there'll be some of them were going to California, but some of them will be going to New Mexico for their abortion freedom. And that's where many Texans go. And New Mexico is already overwhelmed trying to provide those services. It could just make providing those services even harder for Texans. But, you know, I'd say what you like about, you know, a pro-abortion, a pro-life or whatever, we should all expect that the politicians are going to tell us the truth about where they are on an issue. We should at least expect that they're going to tell us what they're going to do really if they get elected. And it seems like the only way we can actually find out what Texas Republicans want is if we get some of these secret recordings of Texas Republicans meeting with groups like the ones that back death penalty for abortions and IVF, Andrea.
Right, absolutely. So there's a lot of reading between the lines in terms of figuring out, you know, what are the true goals and motivations of Texas Republicans and Republicans writ large, right? Certainly, you know, in the big headlines, you know, they want us to hear states' rights, leave it to the states, exceptions for rape and incest, exceptions for IVF and life of the pregnant person. But in practice, the groups that drive these campaigns, that back these politicians, they are very clear. They believe that abortion is murder, that abortion should be criminalized, that people who have abortions and people who provide abortions should be criminalized. And that is those are the beliefs underpinning all of these campaigns that underpin so-called pro-life politics, right? So it's a real feint to, you know, tell voters one thing, don't worry, you know, to sort of give us the little head pat, don't worry, your silly little lady voter head, it won't be so bad, when we know, right, that many, many of these lawmakers are meeting with some of the most extreme, most egregious anti-abortion lobbyists, taking their money and doing their bidding.
I just want to go back to this one point about the Texas Medical Board receiving public comments until June 1st regarding their new rule on medical emergencies in the context of the exceptions for abortion bans. So the public does have an opportunity to go online and to register where they feel on this. You can oppose it or to make some clarity. Texans deserve clarity on what the law is and how it will be implemented. And you have an opportunity to express that. And you can go to progresstexas.org, and they have a link there and information on how to make this. So, Andrew, do you think I know that the people who are opposed to abortion are organized, and they're getting their folks to go online and to register their feelings on this. Are we seeing similar efforts from the people who want abortion freedom or clarity about this doing it as well?
Oh, absolutely. Sure. And you know, there are so many groups on the ground here in Texas that are doing really powerful pro-abortion and pro-repro rights advocacy. Avow Texas, Lilith Fund, T Fund, West Fund, Frontera Fund, all of the Texas abortion funds are doing really great work rallying support for abortion rights. And, you know, and of course it goes beyond, you know, submitting a comment to the medical board, which is, you know, can really get sort of hairy and in the weeds, but it's really important for Texans to make their voices heard, even if your representative is probably on the opposite side of the issue, right? My take on this sort of thing is don't let them get away with it. Don't let your anti-abortion representative believe that you agree with them. Make sure they know that you disagree, right? And I think that that's the approach that a lot of Texas organizers and activist groups are taking, which is that, you know, despite the power of the anti-abortion lobby and anti-abortion Republicans in Texas, you know, we're not going to let our families go down without a fight.
You know, there was a time when people said this day would never come. We'd never be in this situation. Yet here we are. What lessons should we take from that, Andrea Grahams?
I think the most important lesson is to listen to the activists and organizers on the ground who are closest to these issues and closest to the fight, which often means listening to organizers and activists of color, listening to Black women organizers, listening to Latinx organizers, right? When folks sound the alarm because we see this stuff coming from miles and miles away, it's so important to believe them. It's maddening to go back and look at, you know, the last 20 years of abortion politics and see so many experts saying the end of Roe is coming, right? And Republicans were always very open about wanting to dismantle Roe. You know, so to come to this point where it seems to have come as a surprise to so many folks, you know, is really disheartening. But, you know, the important lesson to learn is that we don't have to let it happen again. If we trust women, if we trust pregnant people, if we trust Texas trans folks, and really take those folks seriously instead of always playing the horse race political game.
Andrea Grahams is a writer, activist, pens the newsletter online, Home with the Armadillo. She has an abortion news roundup on that website, keeps you up to date on what's happening on this critical issue. Andrea, so good to have you on the air. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.